The date is October 26th, 1984, and we're watching The Terminator. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Ed Traxler to my Hal Vukovich.
Wow, who the fuck is that?
Those are the two cops at the station.
Okay. Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
You know, I have to find the partner relationship when I do these things, and so sometimes I gotta make deep cuts.
Gotcha. There you go.
So now, anyone who is a regular listener of I Used to Like This One will have probably listened to our Die Hard episodes with our friend Jack Bazook, where we ended up saying that we wanted to talk about this movie with him. Well, he's back, so please welcome Jack Bazook!
Hello!
Hello, Jack. So now, we have kind of made it our personal mission to make sure that you see some of these key action franchises from the 80s. So it is true that until recently you had never seen any of the Terminator movies?
That is true. I had never seen the Terminator movies.
Outstanding. I'm very excited. So this week we are looking back at October 1984 when the movies in theaters were 1984. Teachers, The Razor's Edge, Hot Moves, and of course our movie for today, The Terminator, which earned $78.3 million on a $6.4 million budget. I imagine the producers of 1984 were like just on their asses to make sure that they had that movie in theaters in time for it to be released this year.
Yeah, could you imagine it was like December 31st release? We just got it, just made it. But as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you do not want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and come back and hear what we have to say.
Okay, so the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I've found six. However, the thing is, the first four of them are ridiculously long. Like, I'm talking, if I were to read these taglines, Colin would have no reason to do a 60-second synopsis. Because maybe these aren't, like, taglines from the poster. The first four might just be, like, taglines from the trailer. So I'm going to skip those. Let's just skip off to the really good ones.
Nice.
So I've got two taglines left. First, the thing that won't die in the nightmare that won't end.
Okay.
Okay, I like that.
And finally, bringing it home, your future is in its hands.
Like, that doesn't really sound about the Terminator. It sounds more like, that sounds like a positive spin. Like, that would be, like about Kyle, almost.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's a little misleading.
But because I didn't read the other taglines, those may not be the best description of this movie. So let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
All right.
Yours are always funnier anyway.
In the year 2029, the world is a nuclear wasteland as man wages war against an army of sentient machines. Facing defeat, the machines send their most dangerous weapon, a cybernetic organism with human tissue over a metal endoskeleton, the Terminator, back in time to 1984 to kill Sarah Connor, mother of then-unborn leader of the Resistance, John Connor. John sends his best man, Kyle Reese, to intercept the Terminator, and the two race to find Sarah, who doesn't really have much going on in life at this point. While the Terminator kills every Sarah Connor in the phone book, Reese follows the trail and manages to save the right Sarah in the nick of time. Now on the run from the killing machine and the cops with seemingly no real plan and no way back to the future, Sarah and Kyle fall in love and do the deed. The Terminator eventually catches up with them, and after running him over and blowing it up multiple times, Sarah finally manages to kill it by crushing it in a compactor. but not before Kyle gets himself killed. With her lover dead, Sarah hits the road with her unborn child and future savior of the world, who will send his own father back in time to save his mom and sire him. It's a messed up situation, to say the least, and that is your 60-second synopsis.
Right on. So, yeah, Terminator is one that I feel like I have a little bit of a special relationship with. I mean, I love it because it is the Terminator, and I mean, who doesn't love the Terminator? Of people that have seen it up to this point in their life. But one of my prized possessions, and I mean, this is going to be great for a podcast because it's an audio format. So what I have here is a model car, which was actually used in the movie Terminator. And so like in all the miniature work that is done in the future scenes, this is just some of the garbage in the background that they drive by. So that's one of my prized possessions. I went on a trip with a friend to Los Angeles, and we met a guy that does special effects for movies, and he let me steal one of those from the workshop.
Have you managed to like find this the exact point of the movie and freeze frame it here?
I never have been able to. I've tried. I've watched all the future scenes multiple times. I've never actually seen it, but it was one of the coolest looking ones in the box of broken, beat up, rusty cars it's this special bond that I have with Terminator. Like in my house, on my shelf, I have a piece of Terminator, and so that's why it's always been like something that's special to me. Now, we know that Jack hadn't seen it until now, so we'll get back to Jack. Colin, what about you? What is your history with the Terminator?
I love the Terminator as a franchise. I've seen every movie, but weirdly, I have never seen the TV show, The Sarah Connor Chronicles.
I am the same.
Yeah.
Absolutely identical, yeah.
Yeah, I just remember growing up when I was a kid, and I had never even seen the movie, but I remember just seeing that exoskeleton on TV and seeing the toys and stuff, and thinking, like, man, Terminator looks like it's the absolute coolest thing out there. And then the first one I ever watched was Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines.
Interesting entry point.
Yeah, it came out around my birthday one year, and so that was like my mom took me and some friends, and we went and saw that movie in the theaters.
Nice.
Yeah, and then later on, like when I was older and I started having my own like DVD collection, that's where I went back and watched T2 and Terminator. I feel like Terminator 2 has to be, that's the one I remember having the most fanfare for sure, and it's the one that I think of the most when I think of the Terminator. But I love the franchise as a whole. I recognize that there are some duds, you know, but I mean, to go to the current date, I thought that Dark Fate was pretty cool. I didn't even mind Terminator Genesis. I didn't really like a lot of the actors, but I liked where the story was going, and I kind of wish it would have got more of a shot, but whatever.
So because you have the entry point of Rise of the Machines, so the next ones you watched were T2 and the original Terminator. But because you have that like middle approach to this franchise, what's your favorite in the franchise? I mean, no judgment if you want to like throw it on like Genesis or something. I mean, I'm legitimately curious because like for me, original Terminator and T2 are what got me into it. So
I'm honestly not, this might be blasphemous, but I'm going to say I'm not a big Linda Hamilton, Sarah Connor fan. I feel like she gets a lot of love, and I don't really see it. So I love Terminator 3. I like the TX a lot. Yeah.
And that's the Claire Danes one, right?
Yeah, and the Christina Loken is the evil Terminator. Right. Oh, yeah. I almost think of Terminator to me Terminator is judged based on the Terminator. Similarly, how I base almost all Star Wars movies on which one had the coolest lightsaber fight. So even though most people hate Phantom Menace, it's probably like my second favorite movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think if I had to pick one, I actually think I'd pick Dark Fate. I remember being really surprised by how good that one ended up being. And yeah. I thought it was as a whole one of the better movies, like story plus action wise.
Yeah, because they really went Logan with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Jack, who has never seen any of these movies, is like completely lost in this conversation. So let's jump into the original 1984 Terminator. The funny thing is, before I started doing research on this and watching it, I completely forgot that it was a James Cameron movie. Yeah. I thought he took over with the second movie. I thought it was kind of like an alien situation. Mm. But directed by James Cameron, produced by Gale Ann Hurd, and written by James Cameron, Gale Ann Hurd, and William Wisher Jr., who gets an additional dialogue credit. So I read, though, that the original idea for this movie was basically T2. And he wouldn't have been able to do the special effects at the time. They were talking about using like claymation for the shape-shifting robot.
Okay.
But T2 is what the original vision of Terminator was.
Is T2 the one where he like melts through the bars?
Yeah.
Okay, because yeah. I've seen that scene. I've seen that scene analyzed for the special effects of it, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'll throw a spoiler at you, Jack. In the second one, the person that is sent back to protect them is a reprogrammed Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I thought, in my head, I had Terminator Arnold Schwarzenegger as being the good guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then when he was the bad guy, I was like, I thought, but what, then, yeah. Who's the bad, then what is going on here? I thought Schwarzenegger was the good guy in these movies.
No, in the second one, he is the good guy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay, that becomes the formula going forward after this one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in every other one, like the T-800, which is like the Arnold Schwarzenegger model,
right,
is like the Defender.
Oh, okay, guy. Okay.
Yeah. Except for in Terminator Salvation, because Terminator Salvation takes place in the John Connor time, so it's like Terminator Salvation Terminator Salvation ends up being kind of the movie that you want to see more of, because what you actually want is to see like what is actually happening in the war.
Yeah, like, in the current, like, you know, whatever, 2027.
Yeah.
Where it's like in 6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No. It's 2029. We got 7 years. We're good.
Woo.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I'm laughing about is the fact that you say that, you know, the T-800 is the Arnold Schwarzenegger-looking robot. It almost wasn't an Arnold Schwarzenegger robot. Famously, one of the people that was almost cast as the Terminator was O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
Oh.
He was deemed to be too nice, quote-unquote,
huh.
That no one would buy him as a bad guy.
Well, and is this one of the standout, like, first really big Arnold Schwarzenegger movies?
He would have had a few.
Or were there more before this?
Commando, like, before this.
Okay. So he was already sort of on the scene as a action hero guy.
Yeah.
Well, he had done Conan.
And Hercules in New York.
Yeah, but I think he wasn't an established star yet. Like, this is still, like, he's still, like, breaking out, I think, here.
He has about 7 lines of dialogue in the whole movie, so it didn't really give him a lot to work with there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's crazy, the list, and I'm not even going to bother you with the list, Colin, because it's the same that it's always been, but there were all the usual Mel Gibsons, Harrison Fords, and everything like that, but there were a couple that I found interesting. Tom Selleck was actually the closest to getting it. But Kevin Kline, Chevy Chase, and Robin Williams were all also out of the usual action stars that I list off whenever I talk about alternate castings. Robin Williams as the fucking Terminator.
I don't know if I can imagine that.
I mean, I can imagine it in a completely different movie where it's like the Terminator is just a bumbling idiot. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. They looked at Mork and Mindy and they're like, ah, he could play someone that is from somewhere else, you know?
Exactly.
I was expecting you to name, like, other professional athletes. Like, I guess I just can't imagine the Terminator being anybody other than, like, a super jacked, like, dude who looks like he could kick your ass.
Yeah. Especially compared to the human that's sent back, is this guy should look so much more imposing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, which is funny because in, you know, the second movie, it is, like, a much slimmer framed individual who is the evil one.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure, like, Terminator is 1984. I'm trying to remember. I feel like this Arnold Schwarzenegger filmed this between his break from, like, bodybuilding and then his return.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm not a big follower of his bodybuilding career. So, yeah, we open this movie in Los Angeles, 2029, and we've got laser fights going on, and we get the whole, you know, words on the screen trope that is in all of these action movies that we've been watching from the 80s, where they explain that the machines rose from the ashes of the nuclear fire and blah, blah, blah. And man, are the opening credits like welcome to the 80s. How long were those opening credits? And the whole time it's with like the letters going by.
And the sweet theme. Do-do-do-do-do. So good.
So Jack, for a first time watcher watching this 1984 movie, you know, we get the back alley where we've got the garbage truck and then like all the lightning and everything. What were your first impressions of watching this movie from the 80s and naked Arnold shows up on the street?
I wasn't expecting that amount of male nudity.
Okay. Not much. I mean,
yeah, like any.
You can
usually
see a little
any
shadow flopping at one point.
Oh, yeah. When he's walking towards those goons, punks? You're like, yeah. Oh, yes, there is. Yeah, he's naked, all right.
Yeah.
I was just like, so, you know, the movie starts and you get that scene from the future, and I was like, oh, okay, this is a movie from the 80s, right? Because yeah. I'm so spoiled now in all of our special effects and CGI and everything, right? Like,
yeah.
You know immediately that, okay, they're using miniatures. Like, the helicopter flies over, and I was like, oh, they're using minis. How cool, right? Like, I just knew that from, like, that was the style of the time. Like the original Star Wars, right? Like, that's how they did things. And then it cuts to this, like, you know, regular people, like the regular garbage truck and this guy. And then, you know, you get this like overlay of lightning like on top of, like, it's just like they had this image and they put the image of lightning on top of it, and I was like, okay, the lightning's a little cheesy, there's a little more lightning than I would assume makes any sense, like it's just like a lot of this like flashing blue light, and then yeah, and then you just see man ass. I was like, wow, okay, not what I was expecting, but
well, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you mentioned him walking up to the punks. Now, earlier you mentioned that he has like seven lines in the movie. There's conflicting reports of how many lines he actually speaks. And like, I don't know whether they count lines of dialogue versus sentences or what. Like, I saw 14, I saw 16, I saw 17. Regardless, it's under 20. But most of them are in the gun store. Or right here in the scene where he talks to the punks. And I think we need to showcase some of those lines by doing a little, I used to like this One Piece theater.
Let's do it.
So, gentlemen, I have just sent you both a copy of a script. Now, this is the Your Clothes Give Them to Me scene. Now, there are two punks. There's the punk member and the punk leader. And, of course, the Terminator, who is mostly just parroting what those guys have to say. Who wants whom? I want one of you guys to be the Terminator. I don't care if you do the accent or if you put a fun spin on it, but I don't want the Terminator. I'll take punk member.
I think Jack, as our guest, has to be the Terminator.
Yes, he does.
Okay, okay.
He does.
Nice night for a walk.
All right. Here we go. Whenever you're ready.
Hey, my turn.
Hey, what's wrong with this picture?
Nice night for a walk, eh?
Nice night for a walk.
Wash day tomorrow. Nothing clean, right?
Nothing clean, right.
Hey, I think this guy is a couple cans short of a six-pack.
Your clothes. Give them to me now.
Fuck you, asshole.
Yes! I used to like this one. I used to like this One Piece theater. Yeah, I mean that shows the quality of what Arnold Schwarzenegger had to work with. Considering one of his other lines is "fuck you, asshole" when he's talking to the superintendent of the building later on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that little scene, the like choosing the words
with the young Bill Pullman. Is that right?
Bill Paxton. Right?
Bill Paxton. Paxton. I always mix those two up.
Oh, we've got another Rupert Everett and Dermot Mulroney. No, Dermot Mulroney and Dylan McDermott situation. That's
there,
what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. To go back to your point about like the lightning when the Terminator and Kyle show up, having watched like the more recent movies more, I always forget. Like, I'm so used to seeing in the newer ones, it's like the time travel occurs in this weird like digital ball, and they always like. Kyle just like appears to get thrown from the sky.
Yeah.
But it's like they always kind of just show up, like the Terminator should just, he's always kind of just nestled in this like little orb thing that comes around, and then, but I mean, I guess that's why they don't really like show any of that aspect. They kind of just show when they appear.
Yeah. Yeah, just the male nudity.
But, yeah.
That Jack enjoyed so much.
The buns of steel.
Yeah, Kyle Reese has the far less graceful entrance. You know what I found funny, though, and I only made the connection on this watch. Kyle Reese, and we've also got a Hal. We've got three names from Malcolm in the Middle in this movie. Like, I'm wondering, like, did the creators of Malcolm in the Middle have, like, a Terminator fetish?
Yeah, I don't know.
I just found it interesting. I don't know. Maybe because you let me know that Malcolm in the Middle is on Disney Plus, so I definitely had some Malcolm in the Middle time.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's just a happy coincidence, but maybe if it was some like weird deep pull Easter egg, then I do appreciate it.
Yeah.
So we end up getting a foot chase with Kyle Reese. Like, I don't understand why he manages to like immediately get the attention of some police, but the Terminator, you know, was completely unscathed.
Yeah, like it seems like when Reese came, like showed up, he like why did the police chase after him? He was just a guy standing in an alley
stealing pants.
Like, he happened to be, he happened to take that man's pants, and then like the cop saw him stand, like the cop, there was nothing that the cop saw him do that was illegal. So why did he start chasing him to begin with?
My guy in an alley.
Yeah, my first thought, a shirtless guy in an alley. My first thought was, well, if you haven't done anything wrong, then a cop has no reason to arrest you. Yeah. So I was like, why is he even running? Yeah. And then I was like, wait, no, he's an action hero. He's got to run from the cops. You can't, you know, listen to them.
Yeah, and he stole pants.
Right. Very illegal to steal pants off that homeless guy.
Yeah.
I was kind of wondering on this watch, I think part of what makes the Terminator seem so robotic is that comparison of how him and Kyle both enter this world, because the Terminator just shows up and is like, from the get-go, it's like there's no, he's just a man on a mission. Kyle shows up seemingly like so disoriented and so frantic and so frazzled that you're just kind of like, and they didn't even play into it a little bit later on, but I was like, man, people must have just been like, this guy's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But yeah, he ends up, we get the foot chase that ends up going through the department store. And, like, I'm sitting there because, like, I'm just on pins and needles waiting for some sponsorship. I'm like, oh, yeah, here we go. We're in a department store. And they don't show shit in the department store. Somehow they managed to film this without showing any sponsors until you see Kyle Reese lower his foot and he is wearing some brand new stolen Nike shoes. And I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, The Terminator is brought to you by Nike, Guess, Winchester and Ruger Guns, Elite Scooters, ERTL Transtar, General Bank, Tampax Tampons, Dreyer's Ice Cream, Keebler, Coca-Cola and Canada Dry Ginger Ale, International Semis, Cadillac and Jeep, Kodamatic Cameras, Sony and Toshiba Electronics. Toshiba was a weird one because there was a TV at the police station where you could see that the name was deliberately covered, but her dictaphone at the end, it wasn't. So, Toshiba dictaphones, but not TVs, I guess? McDonald's, Karo Corn Syrup, Eno's Mothballs, GMF Robotics, Motoman Robotic Arms, Pemex Gas Stations, Johnson & Johnson, and a shout-out to the Jetsons. Plus the possibly real, possibly fictional Big Jeff's Restaurant, Alamo Sports Shop, Super C Ranch Market, Tech Noir Nightclub, P&H Zonverd Drilling, J&G Oil Co., Rubbish Co., Spartan Burgers, and the Tiki Motel. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. So many very technical names with this one.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we'll let you use a robotic arm, James Cameron, as long as our name is prominently displayed across it.
I expected there to be more vehicles.
Yeah, I wasn't catching any of the, off of them. Yeah, not really. So we find out that he is looking for Sarah Connors, because everyone is able to find phone booths and phone books in 1984, so right on. And I feel like every time someone goes to one of these phone books to look like Sarah Connor, they're just using the same shot of the finger going down the page. That's what it feels like, at least.
Well, it feels like they use the same phone book in every location.
I don't know why, but I was like, the first thing that popped in my mind when I watched that scene was like, oh yeah, phone books were a thing. Yeah. Like, I'm often shocked even here, like, every now and then there still is a phone book. I have no idea what's in it, because as soon as it shows up on my doorstep, I just throw it out, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and they're still thinner now.
Yeah, that too.
It's kind of mind-boggling to me, like, in the world that we live in now, where people are so kind of partial about their private information, that there ever was a time where I remember I could look up all my friends, like if I knew their parents' names, I could find all their phone numbers in a phone book.
I could look up my teachers. Yeah. Like that's the thing. Yeah, if I had wanted to egg a teacher or something, yeah, I could look them up.
Does it give you, it gives you the address too, not just the phone number, right?
Sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, you could leave the address unlisted.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, no, yeah, I mean, even by the time T2 came around in the 90s, he was at least able to find the information he needed, like, through the police computer.
Hmm. Using the phone book to track down, I mean, I guess it makes, like, it allows for
the killing of the two others, right?
Yeah, it allows for, like, more murder to happen, and it's like, this, you're setting up this kind of waiting game of when he's finally going to get her. But it also seems kind of odd, like, that they wouldn't have had, like, more information in the future about her, you know?
They do justify it at some point. Like, when he's talking to the cops, he's like, all of our records were destroyed in the future, so we don't have a lot of information. So they're like, because I think the cop asks, like, why the phone book? And he's like, we just have no way of finding her otherwise. Right. We just know her name. We don't know. We had a city and a name, is what I think he said, something like that. But
yeah.
Also, I find it hard to believe that Sarah Connor is that, Like, I mean, maybe, I guess maybe it's just a really Irish town. I don't know, but like,
well, I feel like there should be more of them. That's a pretty common name.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it's spelled in a fancy way, and there was only three Sarah Connors in all of LA.
I don't know. Yeah.
I was also,
how are there no S Connors either?
Yeah. No, yeah, there's not a single other S something. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so, I guess maybe, I mean, Sarah is a pretty common name. I suppose Connor must be a common name as well.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, it does stand to reason that it would be a common name. I was just, like, surprised at how many there were.
Well, and there's also, there's no Sarah that has no H on the end. Like, there's no alternate spellings there.
Yeah, that's
there's
what I was
the
thinking.
There's just the three Sarahs with the H's, and it's just lucky that she decided to use her middle initial in her official phone book documentation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How did that work? Like, if you owned a house, you could put, or you owned, had a phone, you could put your name in for the be in the phone book.
Yeah.
Because, like, what if she just hadn't put her name in the phone book? Then they're screwed, and there's the whole movie done, right?
You would have to request to be unlisted.
Right? Oh, okay. Okay. So everybody
is
listed, like I'm saying. Like,
yeah, because that's the name on the phone bill, basically.
Oh, so they just took it right from there. They didn't.
Yeah,
so whoever
I mean,
was.
You're young, Jack, so we're talking landlines.
Yeah. No, I still have one of those, but I had no idea how they figured it out.
Okay.
I was wondering if you had to, like, sign up to be in the phone book, or they just you had to sign up to be out of the phone book.
Yeah.
That's what you had to do.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like checking the box on an email where
please don't send me these emails. Yeah.
So while everybody is busy trying to track down Sarah, we get to meet the real Sarah, Linda Hamilton, and she is a terrible waitress. I read, though, that there were a few other possibilities for Sarah Connor. One was Lisa Langlois. I have no idea who she is. She's a Canadian, and I don't recognize a single credit. Deborah Winger was cast but backed out. Julia Louis-Dreyfus turned it down because she was on SNL at the time. And Gina Davis and Rosanna Arquette also auditioned for Sarah Connor.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus,
yeah.
What a career change that would have been.
I don't know. I mean, you know, she's now in the MCU, so.
True.
You know.
I mean, to be honest, even Linda Hamilton, you can see almost directly, I feel, how being in Terminator changed what she might have been.
Yeah.
Because, like, I was actually surprised. I haven't watched this movie in a long time, but the Sarah Connor that we have in this movie is not the Sarah Connor of Terminator 2 and, like, mm-hmm. is nowhere near the Sarah Connor that's, like, even talked about in, like, the lore of Terminator. Like, she's the damsel in distress. Like, she becomes kind of, and I haven't seen Alien, but, you know, like, I feel like people hold Sarah Connor on the same scale as, like, Ripley. You know, like, these iconic female
action stars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and someone like Linda Hamilton, I mean, she was also in Beauty and the Beast, a series in, I think it was the late 80s. So off of this, and then she does T2, and she gets all jacked for that, and it's like, and then she was just the jack chick. I mean, it's kind of like Mila Jovovich and Kate Beckinsale. As soon as they start fighting zombies and vampires and stuff, you know, that's all their life ends up being is action movies, too.
Yeah, I guess that's the kind of the curse of, like, the typecast. I mean, I feel like, especially in the 80s, it was probably rare for a woman to get that type of role. And I wonder, like, what level she advocated for Sarah Connor to become, or if that was just always kind of the vision of the character.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit of both, but.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like how, you know, bringing up Sigourney Weaver, you know, same idea where she was the one that survived the first one, and then she comes back in the second one, and she's even more badass. And I think that's the same thing they did with, oh, well, it worked with Alien, so let's do it with Sarah Connor, too.
Yeah, like, I just remember in T2, there's that scene, I think, where she's, like, in prison, and she's doing, like, pull-ups.
Yeah.
And you're like, and I was thinking about this, I was like, This is not. That's not the same woman that you have in this movie.
No, this
at
is
all.
A much softer. Much softer.
I looked up
Sarah
images
Connor.
of like Linda Hamilton, and one of the first ones that comes up is like her just jacked, holding a rifle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that makes you're painting this image, and I'm like, I really don't see that in this first movie. Like, it's not a lot of like she just sort of screams and runs, and then like screams again.
Yeah, I mean, even the idea that it's like I know her really well from T2 and Dawn of Fate and everything like that. You know, I'm familiar with this Jack Linda Hamilton. That to see her in like her pink waitress outfit, no, that's not right. You know, and like everyone's being an asshole to her, and it's like, no, Sarah Connor would not take that shit from anyone. Like, why does every customer in that restaurant have to be an asshole? I mean, you see that she's overlooked, and you're letting your shitty kid put his ice cream in her pocket? Like,
yeah, that was like very, I was like, what just happened? Like, what kid thinks of that? You get ice cream, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna put this on my spoon and put it in the waitress's pocket. Not eat my ice cream.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell kind of kid is that?
Yeah.
And the parents just kind of laugh, like nobody even thinks it's a problem. They're just like, oh, she's a terrible waitress, so she deserved it.
Exactly. That was exactly my thought. Yeah, is it's just like, well, that'll teach her. We're not gonna tip her and we're gonna put ice cream in her pocket.
Yeah.
That'll teach you for working in a busy restaurant that's understaffed, apparently.
That's a cliche. Understaffed restaurants.
Yeah.
Like, why don't they ever have enough staff? Just hire more people. Come on. It's not hard.
It's a hard knock life. Hard knock life in the diner industry.
Yeah. Those LA diners, they're always...
So Kyle ends up stealing a shotgun from the cop car, and he saws off the end of it. And he's walking down the street, and we see this guy holding a boombox on his shoulder, and I loved every minute of it. But meanwhile, the Terminator buys a bunch of guns, or, well, kills a guy for a bunch of guns, but...
Yeah, I mean, that guy...
that shop owner, I'm like, what did you think was going to happen? Like...
Yeah.
This guy's literally just rattling off guns by their full names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uzi 9mm. Like.
Yeah, I'm going deer hunting. I need the laser sight. Like, you know.
And isn't the laser sight on a handgun?
Yeah. It's the same length as the barrel. Like, it's the entire length of the pistol.
But now, I mean, with what you were saying earlier about how do they not just know where Sarah Connor lives, I mean, here he is, he ends up asking whether he, you know, the shop owner has a certain kind of, like, phase rifle or something, some futuristic gun, and the guy's like, what are you saying? The Terminator should at least have the knowledge that in 1984 that gun didn't exist. Even if he, you know, they lost Sarah's records, he should still know when a gun was invented. My Alexa knows when a gun was invented.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Sorry, I was waiting for I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
It seems like since he's a robot, right? Like, they should have been able to program all this. Because I imagine the humans around that work for that, like... Is it a company? Is it a mercenary band? Like, what is... I guess they don't really get into what Skynet is in the first movie. Like, they sort of develop that later.
Well, Skynet is just... It's just a sentient computer program.
So it's basically...
It gets created into this computer. This comes into play, I think, in the third film because they fail. So it gets uploaded into this computer, and then basically it infects, like, worldwide satellites. It basically crosses the globe. And then, like, launches all the government nukes and stuff and, like, kind of, like, destroys the world. You have to think of it as, like, the cloud, like a sentient cloud.
Okay. Like, okay.
Yeah.
That just has the ability to take over all machinery.
Yeah.
Did they do a South Park episode about Skynet? Because probably. I feel like I've seen a South Park episode.
Yeah, I feel like 100% they did.
I feel like there are so many shows that you have watched over the years that all of the information about Terminator has kind of been subconsciously implanted in you. If you watch Simpsons or Family Guy or, you know, like anything that parodies these, even Community has probably made some sort of references.
I've had like, and you know, you see those like iconic images of like Arnold Schwarzenegger wearing the leather jacket holding the shotgun, right? Like you see those, like I know some of those stills and stuff.
Yeah.
And like, I think my, like my first experience with Terminator was I was in Universal and I think there was a ride I don't even know which movie it is anymore, but I went on the Terminator ride. It wasn't for a movie. It was just the Terminator.
Yeah. It came out after Terminator 2, but it was, but it was its
own thing. Yeah. So like I've been on that ride like when I was a kid. So like, I sort of had this like weird, I don't know, like Terminator exists.
Yeah, so it's seeped into your consciousness for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hindsight being what it is, I do think that like there are times when the T-800 is like too human almost and should be a little bit more like when it comes to him being from the future, like I'm just thinking if I was programming some sort of assassin thing, he would just be better at...
Yeah, like it'd be faster and stronger and like all those sort of make it be able to jump up a building or something crazy like that, right? Like if you have that future technology.
And maybe that goes back to what Sean was talking about like why T2 was meant to be the original Terminator, because the T-1000 is that like he is like he's the
like a super soldier.
You've probably seen him, but is he like the T-1000 and the TX are like these liquid metal structures, so that they can like take different forms and like make spikes out of their hands and like get cut in half and be fine and all that stuff.
Okay.
I would say as like actual Terminators, they're much more threatening.
Right. And I agree that makes more sense. Like if something is supposed to be unkillable, right, you wouldn't be able to cut this current Terminator in half and have him. Like, because that's what happens at the end, right? He gets like his legs chopped off. He doesn't try to reattach them. Whereas, like the liquid ones, you see it get cut in half, and then flip it goes back together, and you're like, "Oh my god, how do we even kill this thing?"
Yeah,
yeah,
because it's just like, it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I must say, I really like the pace of this movie with how they tease you with the future. Like knowing what I know now about the Terminator franchise, it's nice the way that they deliver the war through, like when Kyle is trying to hotwire a car and then decides to take a little quick nap and he's dreaming of the future, you know, or seeing what it's like in the underground bunkers. I think they gave us enough of a taste on this $6 million budget that it was like, well played, James Cameron, well played.
Yeah, the movie for like how it sits in, I guess, the memory and of the time, like I can't help but watch it and just feel like it seems like an indie film. Like it seems so indie in its simple storytelling and its effects.
Yeah,
and compared to like what became like from T2 onward, where you have these massive blockbusters.
Yeah,
it's kind of this one. I always find it's rightfully so, like it kind of stands on its own, and it does do a good job of laying the bones. I don't feel like the franchise really picked up on all it could have been based on what they set up in the first movie, but I mean, what can you do, I guess.
Well, I think one thing that I like is some of the charm of the first one, where you get to see Sarah like kind of living her mundane life. You see her as a waitress. You see her getting ready for her date. Her date cancels. You see her going to a movie. Like, I love the moment when she answers the phone and it's the guy that's talking really dirty and it's like for her roommate.
Yeah.
Right? And he gets all embarrassed, and then as soon as her roommate gets the phone, he launches right back.
Yeah,
I'm gonna tear off your clothes. Yeah, I love it. But, like, I mean, that's a lot of fun, is just this mundane. Like, there's all this other crazy stuff going on outside of this where Kyle is on the run for some reason. There's women getting murdered that are named Sarah Connor, and she's just going about her day. And that's one of the things that it's kind of fun. You know, you get a bit of that in Terminator 2, where it's like Eddie Furlong is going about his daily business until all of a sudden the Terminator busts in on him in the arcade. Right, you know, the same sort of thing, but there's more of it in this, I feel, where, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, they make it seem like it's, like, you know, this is, they really give you a sense of her, like, life, right? Yeah. Like, they build it up as they're building up, like, this sort of, like, the murders that are happening. Right? Like, she sees the first murder on the news at work, then she goes home, and then, like, you know, it cuts to the cops, and it's like, I really enjoyed the police in the movie. They're in there for so short before the action starts, like, but I really enjoyed them because they were like, they were funny, that like the lieutenant and his like detective, like, yeah, the line of like, oh, I hate these press cases, I can see it now, they're gonna call him the phone book killer, and they're like, right, like all that, like that was, yeah, really, yeah, enjoyable, like that sort of bantery stuff before you get to like it almost feels like it isn't an action movie until about halfway through. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's like, okay, there's big gunfights and there's glass shattering everywhere and there's explosions happening and there's, oh, it's a chase and, you know, like...
Well, there's something about this movie, too, that feels very compartmentalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the cops never leave the station.
Nope.
You know,
they all get, like, murdered in the station.
Yeah, yeah, like it's only... it seems like it's only a couple days.
Mm-hmm. Max. Yeah.
Like, yes. And it seems like you're very much in... the timeline, like it's not you're like, you're never wondering like, oh, have some weeks passed, have a couple days passed, like everything is pretty linear that way.
Yeah.
I think the movie doesn't feel like, I know the Terminator is an action franchise, but this movie, see, like, I think the bent is more horror. Like, there are times where I was watching this movie and it reminded me almost of like Jason.
Yeah.
Or like Friday, yeah, the 13th, where you're just, it's just this like unstoppable killing force, mm-hmm, and they're just running away. Like, it becomes really clear pretty quick. Like, Kyle has no clue like what to do once he finds Sarah. Like, he has no idea. Like, I'm not even clear what his plan was to just keep
running.
Let's
go this way now.
He has this shotgun that he knows is going to do nothing against the Terminator.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, he just hasn't, again, like no idea what to do about it.
No, but, and yeah, you know, the other thing that really brings it home for, like, the horror movie vibe is the fact that, like, her friend gets murdered right after sex.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the cliche.
But now, you know, if it's too personal, you don't have to answer, but... have you ever worn headphones while having sex? Because I don't think I have. I've played music, but I've never had a Walkman on.
I mean, I'll plead the fifth, I guess. But
okay.
It's a definite, I definitely put music on, but I'm not putting the headphones in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be distracting.
Yeah, like, what are you listening to, a podcast? Like, yeah. While you're...
Sean's editing. just gotta make, oh, that was a good line.
Hold on, I'm multitasking. Don't mind me, honey.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I just, like, why can't you both enjoy the same soundtrack? I mean, you know, right. Put it on the screen. But, like, the character choice to have this chick always wearing the Walkman and bobbing, right, around. I mean, it's like, well, she had it coming, but...
What would have been, like, maybe worse is if, you know how, I mean, maybe they didn't have earbuds at this point, but you know how, like, people share earbuds, so you can, yeah, like...
They both have one earbud in.
Oh, I love it.
That was a really great point you just brought up.
But yeah, I mean, let that be a lesson to you, though. Don't always go around wearing headphones, because it might get you murdered.
Yeah, you might not hear your boyfriend getting attacked in the other room.
Yeah, yeah, you know, while you're out getting your post-sex meal. And...
did her sandwich not look really good, though?
Oh, yeah.
That sandwich, and she made, like ants on a log or something, peanut butter and celery. I was like, man, I don't know if I'm just hungry, but that looks really good.
So, Sarah, though, ends up finding out that there is someone out there knocking off people named Sarah Connor. And so she gets in touch with the police, and she's in a nightclub. And when Kyle and the Terminator show up in this scene, it's the only time in the entire movie that they're seen in the same frame at the same time when they're exchanging gunfire. Other than that, the only other time that like they're connected is when he's like full metal robot at that point.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Just a fun little, the more you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's supposed to be 19. How did she get in?
She's supposed to be 19?
Yeah, the character of Sarah Connor is supposed to be 19. Linda Hamilton was 28. But Sarah Connor...
I was I thought she was like 24, 25.
Oh yeah, I didn't see 19 there.
Yeah, no, with all the, you know, like if you look at her driver's license and stuff like that, like the character of Sarah Connor is supposed to be 19.
Yeah, how did she get into that bar then? Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to know that, but when they bust in and they shoot up the place, and that's a great scene. I love mm-hmm. that.
Up until that point, I had been very proud of the movie for their reloading.
Yeah.
Because in most movies, you know, you get infinite bullets in every gun. And I was really proud. I was like, okay, he's like actually reloading his pistol quite a lot. And he's reloading the shotgun. And then that scene happens. And I was like, okay, that Uzi has been, yeah, okay, they're not reloading anymore.
Yeah, one thing that I found interesting, though, is that at one point he's like plugging his shotgun full of shells.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize shotguns actually held that many shells.
It depends. I think they can hold sometimes up to like 12.
Yeah,
it depends like, on the
I
style of shotgun.
What he,
but
like, put in, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was counting at one point, and I was like, okay, that's sawed off. Like I don't. There's no way that thing holds more than 6 rounds, or yeah, maybe 8 rounds. And he was like, he shoots like 15 times in a row, and I was like, he's not reloading anymore.
Yeah.
Damn.
But yeah, so we get ourselves a good old fashioned car chase, though. At that point, once Arnie catches up with them, and when he gets his eyebrows singed off like by the fire, like he definitely starts looking weird. But like I was looking at it, I'm like, is he wearing prosthetics over his eyebrows? Because like his forehead just looked extra big. But then I read, no, he's not. He actually had his eyebrows insured at Lloyd's of London because he was worried they wouldn't grow back properly. But he shaved his eyebrows, but they were insured before he shaved them off.
Interesting. Wow.
People insure weird shit at Lloyd's of London. Like, people insure their legs and their voices and, like, but, yeah.
Yeah, I guess eyebrows. It makes sense if it's part of your image and you're in a public sort of face.
Like, what is the payout for in that case?
That was my question is like what type of
like hair plugs?
And what's the deductible?
Yeah, like and yeah, how do they like? Is he get the insurance money when his eyebrows get damaged, or like?
Well,
like how does that
if they don't get
like if they don't grow they back right, then yeah, he gets this money.
Yeah, like, but what's it for? Psychological damage, or is it for like some sort of eyebrow surgery?
So weird.
I remember hearing back in the day that Jennifer Lopez insured her butt.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she did. Yeah. Yeah, I think that was true.
In case of like damage to her butt, like so she could get like an implant to make it better again, like
I guess. I
don't... Oh my god.
Yeah.
Actors are weird. This is what we're learning. Actors are weird. Yeah.
So we get a whole bunch of exposition dumps while Reese and Sarah are trying to switch out their cars. And the Terminator fights them, like, because he's stolen the cop car and he finds them in the garage and everything like that. And so they're driving along, and Reese is shooting out the window in front of Sarah's face. She'd be deaf.
He also would not ever be able to hold that gun in one hand and fire it.
Oh, no. No.
Like he at one point he's like, you know, he gets her to drive and he's like up and over on top and he's holding it with his one hand. And I'm like, that gun after one shot is halfway down the next street.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah.
I mean, that was one thing that I thought was cool about having Arnold Schwarzenegger is like, it's believable based on his look and the fact that he's supposed to be a robot, that when he is shooting these massive guns with one hand and they're not moving, like, it's cool because that makes sense. But yeah, like, I feel like Kyle, he should have been like, whoa, like, struggling all over the place, right?
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool. They had lots of the times Arnold was holding the gun with both hands while he was sitting in the driver's seat. Like, every time they cut to him, he was using both hands to fire the shotgun. And I was like, how is he driving this car while he's holding this gun in both hands? Then I was like, he's got good knees. I'm not going to question it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you don't know what kind of robotic attachments he has.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he's go gadget.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing though that I find interesting is this car chase ends up with them like slamming into a wall, right? Like with the Terminator hitting the wall, but then the Terminator escapes. Like, by the time the police show up, the Terminator is gone. And we find out that, yes, he has injuries. But, like, this does not seem like the kind of guy that would just disappear like a ghost.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he would want to leave. Like, it seems like, regardless of his injuries, he wants to kill her. So even if he slams his car into a wall, he would just get out of the car and start going after her again. Not, like, go off and reconfigure and then come back.
Oh no, the cops! Like, why wouldn't he have taken out all the fucking cops too?
Exactly.
Oh man, the 5-0 is here. I gotta go. Like, does Jason Voorhees just give up? No, he comes at your ass. Like,
yeah.
But no, like, for some reason, like, convenient plot point, he disappears this one time that he could have easily taken them out.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Even like later on when they have that scene where he's kind of, and I mean, he's clearly wearing a prosthetic mask at this point, but when he's doing his maintenance and taking his eyeball off and stuff, it's like, was that, maybe that was why he felt like he needed to go. His aiming, his shooting eye was all messed up and he needed to get the thing off and regroup before he could go back and resume his killing mission.
Mm-hmm. I think it's made it seem almost like, so it was his right arm that he was working on, and it was like he couldn't pull his fingers to maybe like pull a trigger. Is like sort of my thought, because like, he couldn't pull his fingers in strong enough or like well enough.
Your other hand.
Punch
them really hard. I mean, now you said prosthetic. I would like to say that I also found that scene odd, so I did a little more research, and that's actually like a robotic Arnold Schwarzenegger for those few scenes where he's actually digging right into his skull and pulling out his eye.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's his hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is still his hands, but he's doing all the work on a robot.
Okay. That's what it looks like to me. It looks like a dummy, because it looks like it had no expression in the other eye.
Yeah. Yeah, the cases where you can see, like, right in. Yeah, those are fake faces. Yeah.
Interesting.
And you're right, yeah, like, he's suddenly really expressionless.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there was one Halloween I actually dressed up as the Terminator, and I got myself a prosthetic metal piece that glued onto my face, spirit gum onto my face. And yeah, I love that costume. Okay, but now, when he does his whole face reveal, or face-eye surgery, where is this apartment? Like, whose apartment is this? Is this one of the Sarah Connor's apartment? Like, when did he get a room?
Yeah.
I thought it was, for some reason, I have it in my mind that it was Sarah Connor's
but see, old both apartment. Of the, both of the dead Sarahs have been found, or do you mean, like,
it was, like,
our
her,
Sarah
yeah,
J.
hers?
No, but it was too crappy. It was like a little shithole.
Yeah, like it was like,
it was like a dive motel type.
Yeah, like,
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't know where he gets this place from. I mean, there is the point where he goes and murders Sarah's mom, and he's just hanging out in a log cabin in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that seemed odd to me, too. Like, why kill her mom? Just so he can get to her better? Yeah. Like, just because?
He knew that she would check in with her mom, I guess.
Yeah.
This guy that doesn't know where her address is.
Yeah, but knows.
Came back in time, knew that the mom was the way to go.
Mm-hmm. And that's after they've already been on the run. Like, that's after they left the police station and everything, right? Like,
Yeah.
After their one passionate evening.
Yeah.
I did not remember that scene at all.
The mom
the
one?
Hookup. No, the hookup.
I
remember
the creation of John Connor. You forgot about that?
It seems like so. They did it once, and she got pregnant. Like, come on.
Hey, it can happen, man. That's what they teach you in high school.
Yeah, yeah, we need to have a discussion about protection, Jack. But yeah, no, they it can happen. That's for sure.
It can. It's just like. But, improbable.
Yeah, it does also make me wonder, like, there's got to be some sort of time paradox at play here about someone from the future. I don't know, like, it's just...
Yeah, like, how is, like...
Some butterfly effect situation going on. I mean, I remember the episode of Futurama where you find out that Fry is his own grandfather or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, something to be said about, like, well, and just the way that he sort of introduced it, where he was like, I came back because I'll never stop loving you. And like, the only reason you know her is because you came back. So how did you love her in the first place to then cut? Like, you know, like, it always, there's always no way to understand it, how it started.
He because fell in love with her picture.
Yeah, he fell in love with the picture that his son gave to her him about that, but he didn't know. That was his son.
Yeah, and he so really in the future, it's like the army, like the general gives his lieutenant a photo. The lieutenant falls in love with the photo, and then is his best lieutenant. And, so and the general sends the lieutenant back father. In time, yeah, and then becomes the general's father because of that.
Yeah.
Sacrifices himself to become the general's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, like in a weird way, John Connor set up his own
birth.
Yeah. I mean, he Marty McFly'd it, right?
He did. He really did.
That's what he did. Yeah. He set his father up to punch Biff. That's what he did. You know? So,
we were at the cop shop, I think.
Yeah, so everyone's been arrested, but everyone thinks that they're safe because there's 30 cops in this building. They'll be perfectly safe. You know, famous last words. And we get the Terminator walk in and size the place up and say his most famous line of dialogue, I'll be back, which actually Arnie did not want to say. He did not want to say, I'll be back. He wanted to say, I will be back, because he thought that sounded more robotic. He was very big into the robot thing. He also doesn't blink as the Terminator. Which is impressive, because there's one point when he's running down the street firing a gun in front of him. And, I mean, yeah, he's got shades on, but it doesn't look like he's blinking even with that. Cool. But, yeah, he thought, I'll be back sounded, quote, too feminine. Apparently contractions are feminine.
What is this, the French language?
Yeah. All this she language. I'll be back. Come on. Now I sound like a fancy Nancy. I'm a dandy. Saint Isle. That was Arnie's argument in 1984, I guess.
Interesting.
Yeah. But, you know, James Cameron being James Cameron, and, you know, famously he's very strict with things, was kind of like, you know, you read the lines, I'll write the lines. How about that, Arnold? And, you know, the iconic line is, I'll be back. So, did any of you notice the continuity error in the police station?
No, what's the continuity error?
He comes in, he says, I'll be back, and he goes out, and then you see the clerk writing at the desk, and headlights come up on his face, but when they show the car crashing through the window, no headlights.
Oh, interesting.
That was the first continuity error.
He turned him on and turned him back off.
Yeah. That was the first continuity error I ever spotted on my own in a movie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
The one thing I noticed about the police that really tripped me out was, I think it's earlier when they're interrogating Kyle, maybe, but like the black cop, the sergeant or whatever, comes in and he's smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
And he gives it to one of the other officers. And at first that officer is just holding it, but later on you notice that then that officer starts smoking that cigarette.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. I'm not a smoker, but that just seemed gross to me. Like,
you know, that's the thing is, you know, as a former smoker, I know what it's like of, hey, can I get a drag off that? So, yeah. You know, I come from a lifestyle of sharing cigarettes, but I mean, you know, that was 3 years ago. I might have done that, but not anymore. I'm not much yeah. of a share anything with anyone anymore.
Oh, I'm in the lifestyle of everything is shared currently. Yeah. Everyone has a vape and everyone's passing them around. But I mean, I'm in college, so.
Well, it depends what kind of vape you're talking about there, college boy.
Both.
Okay, see, and that vape I understand, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I would still pass a joint with someone. But yeah, like someone wanting to drag off my cigarette or my vape, that's one where no, I don't think so.
The bit that got me about the lieutenant is that he comes in to comfort her, and he goes, can I get a cigarette? And the guy hands him a new pack, and then he like pulls his left hand to open the pack, and he's holding another cigarette.
Yeah.
As he already was taking it. I was like, ah, that's good. That was funny.
Yeah. That was a moment that I definitely noticed. I you know, like the idea of this police station in the 80s, like, I mean, this psychiatrist is also not someone that is fit to be handing out medical advice, I don't think, right? Like, this guy is a problem, that's for sure. I mean, he gets even worse in T2.
They bring him back?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice. He comes back. I love him. He was so good. He was like, I could make a whole career off this guy.
Yeah,
usually when they're crazy, it's not this in depth. And you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'd have to rewatch Terminator 2. It's also been a long time since I've watched that one.
Yeah. Well, I did notice that when he does get into the police station, he is suddenly wearing a different outfit. So somewhere along the line, you know, he's picked up a new leather jacket because he's no longer wearing the weird punk one.
He doesn't have the gloves anymore either. Yeah.
Yeah. He's wearing something that's a little more of his Terminator 2 vision, you know, the more streamlined, cool leather jacket.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to see the scene of him going and stealing another jacket. I don't know. It's just it was hanging out at his apartment that he has for some reason.
Yeah.
But then when the shootout at the police station happens, the soundtrack takes a very interesting 80s synthesizer turn. You know, the music that's been pretty dramatic up to this point has suddenly gone very 80s on us. But they escape and they hide under the bridge, and Kyle's been injured, so she does first aid on him. And he said, wow, that looks like a good field dressing. And it's like, she wrapped a bandage around his arm several times and then tied it in a knot. Is that all it takes to have a field dressing complimented? If I walked into a triage center and started wrapping gauze, would I get, like, you know, a gold star?
You get your first aid seal of approval.
Yeah. One big stamp on the forehead.
Yeah.
Expert.
I mean, I've been an expert at first aid this whole time. I didn't realize that. That's all I'm saying. Because I can wrap a tensor bandage, and that's basically all she did. Oh. When the landlord comes to check on him in his apartment,
yes.
I wrote down that his responses that come up on his little display are, the first one is yes/no, or what, go away, please come back later. Fuck you, asshole. Fuck you. So, those are the options that he had of throwing back at him.
I think it's interesting as how the movie progresses on, you get more and more of the, like, Terminator vision. Like, yeah. It's like the very beginning, they could have shown you that so that you knew he was a robot. I guess they didn't really want to spoil that he was a robot until he did the whole big eye reveal, right? That was sort of the idea.
Yeah.
But, like, the moment his eye has been revealed, you get way more of that, like, stalking predator style, like Terminator vision,
yeah.
When he's chasing them, and when you and then you know, the like the sentence choosing thing, right? Like, they go more into that, like, technology, like, well, yeah, he's a robot,
you,
right?
You do,
like,
see it right from the beginning because he scans the punks right off the bat.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah.
I feel like I must have missed it. Like, it's
maybe,
like,
maybe they add more of it later on. But yeah, no, they mm-hmm. they pop it in.
They do that. Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not
wrong. So yeah, Kyle and Sarah have checked into a hotel or a motel with a kitchenette, and they're making plastique together. And that's the moment when she inadvertently gives up the address of the motel to the Terminator, who has killed her mom.
I don't know how he's making all these journeys.
That's a cabin in the woods, isn't it, where her mom was?
I don't remember it.
Okay.
Yeah, like he's obviously probably just stealing cars and going, right? Like, but it just feels like there's a lot, like, we were talking about earlier how it's like, it seems like it's all happening within a couple days, right? Like, maybe they sleep a couple nights. And so it's like, well, how far away was she? Was she close? Obviously, she must have had to have been close enough for him to drive there.
Yeah, like this hotel had to be outside of the city limits, I guess.
Yeah, like, or something, because it has to be close enough that they can get there.
Well, one thing I found funny, I mean, is they're making the plastique, and he's showing her how to make them into, like, dynamite. And like, there's the moment when she goes to screw on the lid, and he's like, whoa, 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 easy with that, right? And then they have the whole bit where he basically confesses that he's a virgin, and then he says that he loves her, and so she fucks him. But then afterwards, the next morning, they're all, like, post-coital playful with each other, and she just throws the bag of dynamite at him. What happened to be careful with that? Like...
Look, once you've had sex, you can throw large explosives at each other, and it's fine.
And it's fine, okay.
Yeah, that's how it works. Do you not know that?
Bask in the afterglow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're at that part of the relationship where everything is just cute.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, I almost died.
Yeah, it's playful how you throw unstable nitroglycerin at me. Unstable homemade nitroglycerin.
Yeah, and that's where half of those ads came in. Like, you know, she's pulling up, she's like, mothballs? What are we making for supper? She's like, corn syrup.
Yeah. And it's like, you didn't even think to, like, grab, like, maybe a box of KD or something? Like, seriously, right? Like, you're only gonna cook up dynamite? Like, you're not gonna have something to eat? Fuck. So, yeah, we get another car chase, and then we get the semi truck that straight up runs over the Terminator. But unlike the last time when he was wrecked by an automobile crash, this time he keeps attacking. Like, that right there tells me that in the previous scene he should have just kept coming at them.
Yes. Yes, completely agree. Like
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say that would be a continuity error now that you guys mention it.
Yeah.
Did they do these effects stop motion, or is it like a really, really, really old CGI?
I think the full body Terminator is really is stop motion.
Okay.
And then when you only see part of the body, that's like an animatronic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a puppet.
That's a Stan Winston creation. Yeah.
Interesting.
But, you know, like when the Terminator, like, ends up in this car accident or the semi, and it ends up like burning up, and like the flesh is burning off his body. That would stink. Oh my god, that would stink.
Mm-hmm.
Even the little amount of flesh that was there. But Sarah, of course, makes the monster movie mistake of saying it's dead, because that, of course, leads to the Terminator skeleton coming to life and stop motioning its way down the hallway.
Yeah.
Like, the stop motion was a little rough. I will give it that much. And, like, the bit where it's walking down the hallway, it looks like they're just, like, repeating the same section of hallway over and over again. Like, it's the fucking Flintstones with the background that keeps, you know, repeating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the part of the movie where I felt like it got really horror. Maybe it's because it's an exoskeleton, but it got really horror-esque.
Yeah,
because I kind of felt like we were cheated.
You lose that actor, right? Like, once he becomes an exoskeleton, it's not Arnold Schwarzenegger anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah. I often wonder if, like, Michael, or maybe there was an alternate ending or something, or things changed, but I wonder what Michael Biehn thinks of like how Kyle Reese dies. Like I feel like Kyle deserved like a really emotional, like, you know, we almost got it, Sarah. Ugh! Like Leonardo Titanic type death, where he just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But he kind of just gets beat to shit and thrown away, and then it's not until Sarah's like crawling over his body where we realize, oh, he's dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think about the fact that Kyle came back through time, and then she ends up like changing when the future happens by killing the Terminator in this movie. So isn't there another Kyle that could come back for her if he wanted? Like, really, they could have brought Michael Biehn back if they really wanted to.
Yeah, they could have just said it was a separate timeline or however you want to justify it.
Well, I mean, technically, if you really thought about it, the war happens in 2029. So assuming Sarah's 19, she would have been 55. Let's say Kyle, how old do you think Kyle is? Like 30, 25 maybe?
Yeah. Yeah,
so like, there is a possibility where Sarah could find young Kyle. Like old age Sarah could find like,
right,
college aged Kyle.
And, right. Like she'd be 40 and he'd be 22 or something. Well, like,
yeah,
that, right? Like,
yeah.
I'd be like, hey, John, I want you to meet your father.
Well, yeah, so
I think I think his lore is he was born in like 2002 or something.
I was like, yeah, has Kyle been like the person who could be Kyle in our universe been born? Because like,
well, yeah, because
I'm a year older than Kyle is. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, that war is 7 years away. So
yeah, like I'll be prime fighting age.
That's right.
But also, why didn't they send a T-800 back to kill Kyle Reese's parents? And then Kyle can't come back.
And then now we're getting a little meta here. Hold on.
Huh? That's true. Yes. I don't know. I just watched a Ricky Gervais special where he talked about how everyone says that, you know, if they had a time machine, they would go back and kill baby Hitler. And yeah, then he pulls up a picture of baby Hitler on the screen. And he's like, how could you kill that? Look, he's adorable. He hasn't done anything wrong yet. And it's absolutely hilarious because, like, you know, you think about this. Yeah, go back and kill Kyle Reese as a baby. But yeah, killing the parents, I guess that's better.
Well, they say that because I'm at, like, Kyle's parents are about the same age as Sarah.
Yeah.
It would yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they are Sarah. What the fuck?
What?
now Kyle's not only John's father, but also his brother.
Oh, boy. I've got an idea for Terminator 7. yeah, so I mean they're in the robotics place and you know they turn on all the machinery to confuse it as a distraction. I mean that's a smart idea. But Reese has started to succumb to his injuries and all I can think about is like maybe you guys should have grabbed some of those flak jackets from the cop station that you were holding up and commenting on. Like, why weren't they offered bulletproof vests by the cops?
I love that scene because he's like justifying the fact that the Terminator didn't die in like getting shotgunned. And he's like, well, you know, feel that. It's so strong. He like hits the vest and I'm like, yeah, okay, but he got shot like 6 times.
Yeah.
Like there's no way that vest would have held up after more than one shot. Like
he was wearing 2 of them. And a phone book.
Phone book.
So when Reese blows up the Terminator with the dynamite, and Sarah has something in her leg, like, is that shrapnel from the exploding Terminator?
Oh, maybe? Did she get blown back? Like, did she fall on something, maybe?
Well, she falls. Is that where she falls down the stairs? I don't remember.
It's got to be something. There's definitely like a catwalk, and then they fall down, and then he like throws the dynamite, and it gets stuck in Terminator's like it's like in his like hips area, hip joint or something.
Yeah,
and that's why he gets blown up only halfway.
Yeah,
that got me. By the way, the whole I was like, oh, okay, they did it. They won. And then he started crawling, and I was like, they didn't win. They didn't win.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, like, you know, he ends up chasing her through, like, the giant pneumatic press or whatever, and she crushes him. But, like, the reason for Terminator 2, because that's why you think they ended it, but they found, like, one intact microchip from the skull, and the arm is still in good shape because it was hanging out.
Yeah.
So it's like that's what they have to rebuild all this technology that creates the future. Like, that's the thing. By crushing that Terminator, okay, but doing a piss-poor job of it,
right,
she that's has what caused the starts, world.
Yeah. Right, because, you know, yeah, you bring it back so you can learn from the future to make the future happen.
Yeah.
I was wondering how they were going to justify a second movie, because it seems like they tied up all the loose ends. Like, I was like, okay, yeah, they, like, took the picture of her in the desert in her Jeep, and they, like, I knew she had the baby, but I was like, I know the idea is that, like, more Terminators come back, and it's all still set in the past. Like, they don't put them in the future until later in the series. And so I was wondering, like, how they were going to do the second one, like, because to me it seems like this was a standalone movie.
Yeah, she only keeps delaying the apocalypse is kind of what the whole thing ends up being. Yeah.
Okay. So interesting. I just like how, like, this could have been a standalone movie. Had people not liked it, it would have ended, and it would have ended well, and then they could have been done with the right. Like, the thought was complete.
Yeah.
And then they went, no, we can make more out of this because people liked it, right? So
we can, like, make five new sequels for Avatar. That's what we can do.
Yeah, Despicable Me's, and it's like 17th sequel now.
The next two movies differ from this one in that, like, the protagonists have their own agenda.
Okay.
So, like, in the next two movies, Terminators get sent back to kill them again, of course. But the whole idea of when is Skynet going to launch becomes a factor, and so Sarah and John are then working to prevent that from happening. So they actually end up having, like, more of a thing to do other than just run.
Because this one here was just survive.
Yeah, and then, they've got the espionage side quest going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is making me want to watch the other movies now. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I mean, we are now introducing you to these franchises, so we... We'll have to do Terminator 2 with you at some point.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah, I mean, she has the great line of, you're terminated, fucker. So, you know, I guess she gave him his name. And then we get the epilogue in Mexico where she's making her diary for her son. Imagine the hours and hours of tape for John Connor to listen to.
I mean, jeez.
Like, it's a good thing that the future is, like, bleak, because you got nothing else to do, but... Like, I don't expect my kids to one day sit down and listen to all my podcasts.
In every episode, you start, like, putting, like, significant, like, life advice right at the end. There's, like, a segment.
Yeah, kind of like the Jerry Springer's final thoughts, you know, that kind of thing. Just for my kids. Yeah. But, yeah, and like you said, though, we tie up that loose end because the little Mexican kid takes her picture. And says there's a storm coming, and she says, I know, very significantly, and then drives off into the fakest looking storm ever.
I mean, very nice painted background for this guy.
Like, as much as I didn't like the stop motion Terminator, I really didn't like the very last shot of this movie. That was a disappointing final shot, but there we go. That is the Terminator. Now, Colin, Jack, on IMDb, it scored an 8.1 out of 10 and a Metascore of 84%. On Rotten Tomatoes, I'm going to go to the audience rating first. I don't usually do that. 89%. But it has a critics rating of 100%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a giant pneumatic press crushing my skull, hit me with some reviews. 100. I mean, I was expecting some sort of fanfare from both of you. 100. We've never had a 100.
I just don't really believe it. Seems impossible. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. One review. Yeah. So somehow,
one 5-star review.
Somehow it's, like, been overlooked by all the critics for some reason. Yeah.
Stoner J gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says the thrill starts in the very beginning and never lets up.
The music was so fantastic, it wrenched up the tension big time, more than anything else like it. Cameron was way beyond his time with this, never seen anything like it until part two, an equally awesome sequel. Saw it when I was a little kid and it stuck with me since. Needless to say, I was first in line for part two. I wish all the other sequels didn't tarnish the brand. I guess it's good Cameron wasn't really a part of those.
All of them. I feel like we've heard from Stoner J before, too.
Probably. Joe E. gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, the big man Arnold Schwartz is an absolute beast and has an absolute package on him, unlike me. Sad face. Love this film, and it will happen if Elon doesn't piss off two Mars.
Hashtag social commentary.
Yeah. Mo A. gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, they should teach this movie in film school. I can literally say this movie was perfect in every way, shape, and form. It was way ahead of its time.
Hmm.
Pockets S says, 4 out of 5 stars. It's gotten a bit dated now, but it still looks pretty good and has great pacing. Though it is overshadowed by its even better sequel, The Terminator is still a great film on its own.
Okay, yeah.
Adyon D says, 4.5 out of 5 stars. Terminator is one of those proven classics that never gets old. This is the archetype of perfect blend sci-fi and action. It equally develops its lead characters, also features a star-making performance by Arnold Schwarzenegger. The dialogue and one-liners are fantastic, my favorite being, I'll be back. The tension is developed so the edge of your seat experience is present. Most of the action scenes work. The only negative is that because this film is 36 years old, it was a low-budget film at the time. The special effects, especially with the cyborg and climax, is aged poorly. But aside from that, it's one of the best genre blender films, and if you're a movie fan, you should definitely check it out.
But aside from that, yeah, I mean, you know, you have all those other famous catchphrases to pick from, like, fuck you, asshole, or your clothes, give them to me, you know, like, so witty. Right on. So yeah, 8.1 and 89 from audiences and 84 and 100% from critics. I mean, I love The Terminator. This one isn't my favorite one. And I mean, I'm going to sound like such a basic bitch saying it, but T2 is probably my favorite one of all of them. But I'm like Colin, I really surprisingly enjoyed Dark Fate Dawn of Fate quite a bit. But yeah, it's still the Terminator. It's still the classic. And it's really neat looking at it through the lens of a monster movie, like you said, instead of just thinking of it as like an action movie. Because mm-hmm. this one really does have a lot more of that stalking quality than this. Yeah. If you haven't seen The Terminator, you should watch The Terminator. And I'm glad that we've introduced it to someone new here. So, Jack, it is your first viewing of The Terminator. What did you think?
I really liked it. This sort of action style movie is not usually my cup of tea. I enjoy them, but it's not something I like seek out actively. Like otherwise I probably would have seen all these, you know, years ago. But when I watch movies and then come on here, I sort of watch them in like a little bit of a different way than I normally would, because I'm like thinking about what I'm going to talk about as I'm watching. Cause I'm like, I'm like looking for fun little things that I enjoyed, and I'm sort of watching it almost like a critic or like a reviewer. I feel mm-hmm. rather than just watching it for the enjoyment. And like, I love in these movies when I can find like the enjoyment just hits me. Like, I'm just like, oh, this is really fun to watch, rather than like, oh, I'm watching this like an assignment.
Yeah.
And I'm like I found that with this one, there were lots of times where I was like, oh, this is really fun. And then there were other times like I missed a lot of the exposition about the future because I was like, I don't really care to listen to this guy talk. Because, you know, when they're under the bridge and when all that sort of, like, I was like, eh, it got kind of boring. But, like, the Arnold was funny. The gun story was funny. I almost missed I'll Be Back because I was like, well, what's going on here? He's just, like, in the cop store. And, like, he's like, I need to talk to Sarah Connor. And he's like, no, you can't. And the guy's like, okay. And then he just, like, said his line. And I was like, wait, was that a line? I had to, like, rewind and go back and find it again. I was like, "That I know that line.
That was the thing. That was the thing. Yeah. Was,
like, he said the thing. Yeah. So I really, like, it was a fun watch. I'm excited to see, like, where the series goes, like, to watch all the other ones. And, like, I can see what people liked it at the time. right? Like, I can understand why it was a well-loved movie, and I'm like, watching it now, it's a little hard to watch because, you know, the CGI, there's not a lot of good special effects, but it doesn't really matter because, like, you're not watching, I watch, you know, say you go to watch an Avengers movie now, where you're like, you're going to praise it for how good its effects are, right? I'm not going to praise the Terminator for its effects, but at the time, it probably was because it was a low-budget movie, and it did really well with its low budget. And so there's way less of that now. And it's like, it's really, I like seeing these really, like these, like, you know, I guess you could say really old movies. And like, they still hold up. They still have a lot of good parts that like outweigh all the sort of like cliched moments and, you know, stuff that you've seen. But if you don't have something to go off of, like, cliches are only created after somebody saw something they liked and did it again.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah, so some of these newer movies, I mean, the special, they're getting so special effects heavy that I don't know what to believe at all anymore.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you know, I agree. Like, you can barely tell when there's acting happening and when it's CGI.
Yeah, you don't even know whether they're even really somewhere.
Mm-hmm, you know, like, totally.
You know, like the fact that something like all these Star Wars series are all filmed on the volume, you know, this 360 degree stage that where it's actually projected in real time. Like, it's just, you know, you can't believe anything anymore. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's like, at least there is a tangible quality about it, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, totally.
But okay, so now we've made you enter into the Terminator universe. The other one we made you enter into is Die Hard. If you had to put up Terminator against Die Hard, which one is the better franchise that we've introduced you to so far?
I think I like Die Hard more so far, but it's just because it was a little funnier.
It wasn't as exposition heavy.
Yeah, like it was less of a story and more of just sort of like, what the hell's going on? And like, yeah.
Colin, bring us home. What did you think about Terminator on this viewing?
I think, this is my position, I don't think that the Terminator is a bad movie, but it definitely doesn't age as well as you would hope.
Yeah, fair.
And the thing that about the Terminator is I think it has like a great foundation and great bones. I think even though they keep making new movies, I think purely to kind of, you know, because people love Schwarzenegger, I can't think of a movie franchise that I would actually want to see get a true reboot treatment and be rebuilt from the ground up with like good actors. And I know they kind of tried to do this with Genesis, but they still kind of leaned on Schwarzenegger. So I mean, I just say like, take it back to the bones and redo it, because I think the story, like the overarching like mythology of the Terminator, is awesome. But I just think when you look back as the franchise as a whole, it's kind of like it's always been done piecemeal and not done with like a lot of forethought. So yeah, okay. That's kind of my take on Terminator and the Terminator franchise as a whole.
So you would like Terminator to be headed by one person, like Kevin Feige, that has an overall vision of, you know, this entire franchise.
Yeah, or even, like, I just think when you look at these movie franchises, I mean, Marvel is one thing, but I'm thinking about even ones like Mission Impossible or, you know, like, the more current, like, Bond films or even Fast and the Furious.
Jurassic like, it's World. Like,
yeah, it's like you can tell that there's at least somebody who's like a guiding vision for what they want it to be, even if it is shit. Yeah. Like, even if things do turn out shit, like, there's still somebody who you can, at the end of the day, you can look at it and be like, oh, it's all unified. Whereas in Terminator, it's like you got actors changing all over the place, you got like continuity errors all over the place because you're dealing with time travel and just like people not really like taking into consideration what happened before and just wanting to do their own things. But like I said, I think the mythology is great. So I think if you had somebody who could just like be there to kind of steer the ship, as it were, then you could make something great for a modern audience.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what you need to do is just find a name that sounds almost like Terminator and just start a new franchise. It's like, no, it's completely different. What are you talking about?
exterminator.
That's right. The termite.
Yeah.
It's all based on bugs.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is the Terminator, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy, a big, huge thank you to our buddy Jack Bazook. I forget if you're a social media, like whether you care about people coming to your social media. You always reluctantly say yes.
Yeah, exactly. So. Well, yeah, my Instagram is just Jack_Bazook, and that's about all I ever post on.
Right on.
Yeah.
So if you want to see Jack cheerleading, go follow him, I guess. But thank you for joining us as always, Jack, and I guess we'll see you again for Terminator 2 at some point. If you like that show, one thing you could do to really help us out on the business end is, well, just tell somebody. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast trying to build an audience. Or go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on and give us 5 stars. Doesn't matter what you say in any review for us, it's not for our egos, but just go give us 5 stars and help drive us up the charts, help us get noticed. Or if you'd like to be a financial supporter of the show and become a producer, just like executive producer Joshua Blum, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become part of our Patreon family, and you get a shout out.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes, as well as our social media. We got Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff. And if you want to let us know what movies you used to like, email us at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Before you hit stop, Colin.
Too late. Oh, okay. But I can hit record again.
Okay. I just want to do a quick thing for Oblivion Bar. So I'm just gonna do. I'm Sean Wells. You say I'm Colin Stewart. I'll say from the I Used to Like This One podcast. And you say and we're listening, and you're listening to the Oblivion Bar.
Okay.
Cool.